The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
Brent and Lydia talk Starman.
Yay.
I am Lydia.
I'm Brent.
And this podcast is presented to you by Comics League International.
Woo! A double yay!
Sound effects. I say this every time.
Okay. Bum, ba, bum.
So, right now we are going to talk about the 7th issue of Starman. And it was published in May 95. Do you say published or do you say released?
I usually go with cover date just because, like, comics, like, you know, just because it has the date of May 95, it usually came out or was released, like, a month or so beforehand.
Yeah,
it's kind of like when they, you know, with cars, if they talk about, like, it's the 2014 Mustang. It's like, but it's... Why is it coming out like a year or so in advance? I don't understand.
Oh, I see.
I know that, like, I've read that at some... It used to be, like, when they had the cover date of one date, like, once that month, that cover date passed, that was the sign for, like, the newsstands to pull them off the shelf.
Mm.
I don't know if that still has anything to do with it, or if it's... Yeah, I... You know, the... I'll be honest, as much as I love comic books, the intricacies of how the cover date relates to the actual release has never been one of the topics that I've explored.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry. No problem. So, Starman issue 7 is brought to you by Robinson. What's his first name?
James.
James? James. All right. Hi, James. Sorry, I forgot your name. Tony Harris. And what's Von Grobiter's
Wade.
Name? Ray?
Wade.
Oh, Wade.
Yeah.
Oh, Wade. Oh, Wade. Okay, sorry. I just have it. I see it. Makes sense now. Yes. Okay, Wade Von Grobiter. All right. Okay. And, what else do I say?
Well, don't forget about the letterer, John Workman, the colorist, Gregory Wright, and the assistant editor, Chuck Kim, and editor, Archie Goodwin. They're all part of the team to make this book great.
Yes. Obviously, I'm not looking at the same page as Brent is because I only know the last names.
Well, and, you know, We're just gonna work with you to get you to the point where these names just rattle off your head.
Yes, I hope so. And I also wish that I were more fluent in the art of introducing our podcast. But, you know, it's my second time doing it, so listeners, if you're listening, forgive me.
Well, I'm sure if they want to go back in the feed and listen to, like, the Comics League International second episode, then, you know, I'm just gonna say when you've done this about 40 times, you kind of get the rhythm of it, and I'm sure there's a good many people listen to the show going like, but Brent, you're still really not good at it. You just kind of ramble.
It's okay. Rambling is good. But there are two of us. We can, like, bring each other back to the topic. So
exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So shall I just move on to what went on in May? Is it May? May 1995.
Yeah. Could you tell me what happened in May of 95? I don't remember. Even though I was twice your age at this point. Well, not quite.
Actually, I think
I in May of 95. Let's see. Since I was born in June of 81, does that mean I was still 13? So just shy of twice your age.
Yeah. Yeah, I was 7 in 1995, so do the math.
Yeah, so the next month I'll be officially 2 Lydias old.
2 Lydias old, good one. It's like Hello Kitty. Okay, sorry guys, I know we ramble, I'm sorry, but Hello Kitty, she is 3 apples tall.
Yes, she is. I
Wait,
knew that.
Wait, 3 and a half? Was it 3 and a half?
I thought it was 3.
I can't remember, but yeah. Things are a unit of counting now.
Right. I have no idea how many apples tall I am.
Yeah. I don't even know how tall you are in real life. I can't remember.
180 centimeters.
Oh, that's tall. That's tall, you guys. That's tall.
You know, it's basically 6 foot, so I feel like it's very average for where I'm from. Like, I think in the States, I'm taller than the average, but it's only like 1.5 to 2 inches taller, so like 3 or 4 centimeters taller. So it's not enough to really care, you know.
Oh, okay.
And then if you look at Europe, then I'm shorter. But some of the like the English and especially more of like the Scandinavian areas, they're just tall.
Right, right.
So anyway, May of 95.
Yeah, okay. Now, I was just also wondering how tall Ted Knight, no, Jack Knight is.
Huh, I don't know.
If anyone can answer that, send us an email or something.
If you're listening, Tony Harris, this would be a great time to pop up with it. He's this tall.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's talk about what happened in May 1995. Hmm. As you already know, I am very out of tune of when it comes to American or world events of anything that happened before 2002. So maybe even late, I don't know, 2010.
Is that like when you gained awareness or?
Yeah. So I'm just going to pick like a couple of things. One thing that really struck me was the actor for Superman, the live action Superman, he very unfortunately met with an accident and fell off his horse in a riding competition, and he was paralyzed from the neck down. Actor Christopher Reeve. And I really, even though I was 7, I particularly remembered this because my mom, she was making a huge deal about it. She was like, Superman can't move anymore. And she was very, like, she was, like, legit upset. Yeah. So, I think I do remember watching the live action when I was a kid. I watched the Batman live action, like Batman and Batgirl. And I really enjoyed
from like the 60s?
I think so, yeah.
Or the 90s one?
I'm not sure, but wait, there was a 90s one?
Yeah, there was the 60s one where they were still basically in like the like tights. And then I think Batgirl appeared in like the 90s Batman and Robin with like George Clooney.
Okay. It might be the 90s one. I'm not sure because it did look very old.
Then that was probably the... Like, was it a half-hour thing or was it like a proper movie?
Half-hour.
That would definitely be the 60s one.
Whoa, really? I watched the 60s one.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, there were like... Pow! And I mean, you know, they actually spelt it on the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I really like that one. So, yeah, they played it on Singaporean TV in the 1990s. Yeah, so, I did watch Superman live action with Christopher Reeve. So, yeah, it was kind of sad because to a kid, you know, having your mom freak out about... an actor, and she didn't refer to him as Christopher Reeve. She didn't give him a name. She just said that, like, he is the actor for Superman. Like, Superman's dead. that was what I thought.
Yeah,
you know. So, but I wonder how he's doing now? Where is
he? He passed away a few years back.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not sure when, but he passed away.
Mm-hmm. So. Wow. So I don't know. Very unfortunate, but you know, good to be remembered. He really did. I think he really did contribute to a lot of the fantasy, realizing the fantasies of a lot of comic book lovers, you know, and bringing it to screen. So, I mean, Flying Guy.
I just looked it up. He passed away on October 10th, 2004.
Oh.
Yeah, I enjoyed some of his other works as well. Like, you know, I know I've seen more than just the Superman movies. I loved him in, it's a movie called Noises Off.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a farce about people putting on a play. But, I mean, definitely his Superman, I mean, it's kind of hard watching the Richard Donner Superman now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, obviously it was late 70s. The technical aspects of movie making has changed so much since then.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount of heart... that Christopher, in a way, like, so one of my favorite superhero movies now has been the Captain America ones.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is because Chris Evans, like, when he does Captain America, he just, you know, he plays it so earnest without being camp and without being, like, ashamed of it or being tongue-in-cheeked of, like, look, mm-hmm. I'm playing a guy who's a good guy.
Right.
And I think Christopher Reeve did that same thing of he's a good guy.
Mm.
And there's nothing like shameful about that or like, look, I'm kind of a goober. There's nothing about that.
Mm-mm.
And there's so many moments, you know, where he just clearly delineates, is that the word I'm looking for, between Clark Kent and Superman. And I know I've talked way too long about this for the 95 thing, but it was kind of shocking.
Wow. Okay. Christopher Reeve in tribute on Comics League International. All right. The next thing that I picked up was Braveheart premieres at the Seattle Film Festival.
Mm.
So I'm guessing premieres. I guess this was the first time it was screened.
Not sure.
Yeah. Braveheart. I picked it up because I've never watched it, and it's always been one of those, like, I'll watch it, and then, like, 20 years later, I haven't watched it.
Watch it. It's good. I haven't watched it in about a decade, so I don't know if it would hold up, but, yeah.
Mel Gibson, though, I just have this really strong impression of him as the guy who did The Passion of the Christ, and...
Yeah...
I don't know. It just feels so different from Braveheart.
See, now I don't know which is funnier. The idea of mashing those two up. But if it's just Mel Gibson slowly getting crucified, or if it's Jesus dressed up with blue face paint and I don't want to dwell on it because I don't really want to. You know, I feel that's borderline offensive.
I see. No,
but it's also like a funny visual.
Yeah, it's fan fiction. I mean, I'm Christian. I didn't find that very offensive. I mean, I understand how minds wander, but yeah, I do know that if. You didn't mention about the blue faces. I would not have known that Braveheart includes blue faces.
Really? You know, I think I'm going to have to give you homework.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. Watch Braveheart.
I think it's... Give yourself, like, a full afternoon, because it's, like, a 3 or 4 hour movie.
Oh, no. It's so long.
And watch it, because it's good.
Okay. Fine. All right, Brent Sensei. One day. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go on to... Dun, dun, dun. No, that's the wrong effect. Let's go on to... I don't know. Okay, never mind. Let's go into whatever you have to say.
To the synopsis? We'll find some jingle music. I was at, whenever I listen to music, either if it's an independent stuff or friends music or what, I'm trying to find a good background that would work both for our on this month section and for the synopsis. So I guess if anyone listening to the show, especially if you're if you're a music maker yourself, if you have something that you think would fit for either one of those sections, send a, you can either contact me through the Facebooks at the Comics League International side or at my author site. You could send an email to deadlytroubadour@gmail.com, because no one ever sends it email, and it's a lonely mailbox. Or really, you could just leave a comment at the deadlytroubadour.com site. Yes, I know this is kind of fishing for free music, but it's also a way to spotlight other creators and kind of give them a plug. Because obviously, if you give music, then we would link you in the show notes, as well as mention who you are on air.
Yep.
But for now, unless I use the magic of editing and add some music in, we don't have any. So I'm just going to jump into the synopsis.
Okay.
Starman, number 7. A Night at the Circus. And again, we have the apostrophes around the K, so it's silent.
It would be really cool if we had some Jack in the Box music here. Sound engineer, hello, where are you?
Wait, that music? Oh, the Calliope type stuff?
Yeah.
Creepy.
Yeah.
Ba-da-bum. At the start of the issue, we are leaving Opal City for Turk County. For Jack, Turk County holds great deals, even if those deals are often linked to dark secrets. Oh, and there's a circus! And this circus's main draw, at least for Jack, is a freak show, including a blue-skinned cosmic geek. Suddenly, the geek speaks a strange language that freaks Jack out, and upon being touched, Jack starts hallucinating. Later, Jack talks to the circus owner, a Mr. Bliss, which is a very evil-sounding name, Mr. Bliss. He's talking to him about possible junk for sale, and then, well, he gets to his real point. So, the cosmic geek, he's not really chained up, right? Oh, no, says Bliss, obviously not lying. The geek is really Greg Bailey, and, well, he's just gone too far with the yak this time. So sorry, we'll talk to him. Then, Crusher, Bliss's bodyguard, henchman, well, he takes Jack to see where the junk is, and then out jumps the freaks, who attack Jack. Jack is overwhelmed, but he manages to escape, and in the fields, after one last vision of a pirate, he returns to Opal to get geared up, and then he's off to fight in Turk County as Starman.
This issue. Anyway, we'll talk about the cover first. So.
Ooh. See, it sounds unpleasant what you might have to say. It sounds unpleasant.
It's not unpleasant. It's just really confusing. I think it's one of those issues that I have to reread.
So the cover.
Do you feel that? Sorry, I keep interrupting you.
No worries. I interrupted first.
No problem. I was just gonna say, do you feel like something's different about this cover?
Yeah, but I can't put my finger on it. It's like brighter, or maybe it's more symmetrical, even though Jack and the stars aren't really symmetrical.
Yeah. But
it's I don't know, I don't know that much about classic art, but it feels like quasi-religious in a way. Like almost like a stained glass.
Uh-huh. Starman covers. I think it's come to a point where I need to like look at them all like at once, like one to see if I said. Yeah, so I don't know, I just felt that something seemed very like painted, like it's a
Well, they've all been painted so far.
Yeah, but no offense to all any of the artists, but it's like this is like a real painting. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it. It does feel more like a museum piece. I don't know how to say it, rather than a cover, where the other ones have definitely, even though they've been great covers, they felt like covers.
Yeah. Okay, I think I got it. I'm looking at like all the covers, and for some reason this one feels like he's posing for the painting. The others feel like just like a snapshot, or like he's like in action or something. But this one's like, I don't know, he's here, take my painting. Take my painting. No, here, paint my picture. And I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
So,
have the others also been watercolors? Like, I feel like they've been a different medium or stuff. Because I don't know art nerds.
Yeah, me neither. But definitely this one just feels a bit different. Yeah, but I can't tell what they were painted in. Educate us! Creators of this universe. Right. Your input. I would like to listen to what you have to say.
About the cover?
Mm-hmm.
I really like it. Like, I feel like I could just kind of... Like I said, the others have also been good, but there's something about this one. Like, I don't know if it's the symmetry of it. I don't know if it's, you know, the brighter colors of it. Maybe it is somehow the posed look rather than the kind of sudden snapshot of it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I feel like if I were to stare at it long enough, I'd be able to find, like, a deeper meaning to it. What are your thoughts?
I really like the colors, for one. I think you mentioned that, but let's see, the previous one that looked kind of like this was... No, wait, there was one. Remember there was one. Ah, issue 3. Mm-hmm. Issue 3 kind of had like this symmetry in it. Mm-hmm. And like pop art kind of like structures behind.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, it's a lot more like, again, I don't know art, but if you look at like the motif at the side with the twirling tendril like thingies.
Yeah, that almost look like ovaries.
Oh wow. I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so like those things, and I know, and the other characters inside the little shapes.
Mm-mm.
I like that because I know it just feels a lot more intricate. Like,
yeah,
you know, one of those. Do you remember a few issues back? Maybe last issue you were talking about. It was the issue where Dave and Jack were in the graveyard, and you're saying something about the fence or the gate or something, and the detail as to which they were drawn in, you know, the curvy thingies. And, and I don't know, it just made me think of that, like, the detail, like, to think of putting, like, how they, I say like too much, how Tony Harris, he arranged these characters, like, why did he choose to put them in these little spaces, you know? I don't know, I like it. It's like a spotlight, even though it's small, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes me think that, you know, these four characters, you know, we kind of get lots of people in passing in this issue.
Right.
And it kind of puts a spotlight on these four, even if some of them are barely in the issue.
Right.
So it's kind of like, are they going to be more important in upcoming issues, or were they just, or was there just something about their design that motivated Tony Harris to include them on this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I guess to answer that, we just have to go through the issue.
Okay. Ba-ba-ba. Let's do it.
So, right away, the kind of first thing that popped out to me just opening this first page is, you know, we talked about last issue, last episode, and I'm really glad, just almost immediately, the feeling of it, I'm really glad to have the regular team back on the book.
Right! Yeah. Like, we're back on the story.
Yeah, and just the way, like, even from just the sign of Opal City, it feels right in a way that the last issue, as, you know, I mean, certainly it was good art. Even if like I said, a little misbalanced every now and then, but it was good. But this feels proper.
Canon.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this was the first time that I realized that Opal City is like Singapore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There aren't actually any suburbs in Singapore. We call them the heartlands, but honestly, it's such a small country that we don't actually have what do you call it? Inaka?
Yeah, like a rural area?
Yeah. The most rural area is this island, like some of the islands offshore, and they are offshore, and they are very, like, I think the government has to pay people to stay there to preserve it. Like, otherwise it would really be like underpopulated. I mean there are very few people living there, but it's to preserve the nature and everything and stuff like that. So yeah, no suburbs. It's pretty much everywhere is a, there are tall, shiny buildings everywhere.
So is it kind of like this, like on the main island? Like if you leave the city, then suddenly it's just nothing? Or
oh,
does
no.
the city cover the whole island?
The city covers the whole island. Yeah. And to say that coming out would be nothing, it would be a great disservice to Malaysia, so I'm not gonna say that.
But you're gonna think it. I see.
Okay. Right. So, County, right?
Yeah.
I never thought to wonder what's outside of Opal City. So this was interesting.
No, I really like that too, because, yeah, I didn't really think about it either until we're shown it, and then it very much feels like this surrounding area is kind of as important to Opal City as Opal City proper. You know, the kind of creepiness, the ruralness, the darkness.
Yeah. I wonder what Opal City is surrounded by. Is it like a gate, or, you know?
Yeah, I just got the feeling like that's one of the things that make it so kind of strange about it, is that it's just like suddenly you kind of leave the last street, and it'd be like if you're in the city and you suddenly drive through a park, where it's like city, park. I kind of, from the picture, I kind of feel like that's what it'd be like. So I'm like, hey, wait a minute, there's no more city.
I see. It reminded me of, like, those stories where there would be a castle, you would walk, and you would walk and walk, and then you see this castle looming in the distance, and it just made me feel like, you know, I was in one of those stories, the way that this has been drawn. Yeah, so, looking at these first two pages, I was also very intrigued by Jack's car.
The old army ambulance.
Yeah, and it says Knights Past on it. What is that, the name of his shop? I don't think so, right?
I think so.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, what do we have to say about these two pages? Let's see.
I mean, to me, it's basically just kind of the same thing about the Turk County. Like, I like that it's, you know, kind of it establishes the area is kind of like, well, it's rural. It's a little off, a little threatening. I like that we see kind of Jack, like, it's a nice little reminder that, by the way, this is one of Jack's passions. You know, he likes stuff, he likes things, he likes deals, he likes aesthetics.
Yeah. And there's a lot of narration going on. See a lot of his thoughts.
And, you know, it's getting inside his head and telling us how it feels. It reminds me in a way of, have you ever seen High Fidelity?
No.
It's just a movie kind of about a guy who runs a music store, and part of the movie is him talking to people who might be willing to sell old records. And just the feeling about that, kind of like getting the deal and, you know, sometimes brings him in contact with people who are a little off.
I see. Oh, okay. I'm actually quite interested in that film now.
It's really good.
Okay. High Fidelity. Got it.
And then we get the circus. Suddenly we're... I love how just the team works together on this, and this, I guess, goes a lot to Gregory Wright, the colorist, of when we get to that double page spread, how after being in that kind of hearing how washed out and how brown and just, you know, lack of color and gray in this is, even though the pages themselves aren't necessarily washed out or anything.
Yeah.
But suddenly, once we're in the circus, it does feel like an explosion of color.
Yes. When I flipped the page, I really thought I could hear the music.
Yes. Yes. And, oh, man, it's just... It's
not really only the music, fun. Just the crowd and the chatter and you know, the kids screaming, "Mommy!"
And just, like, there's animals and stuff going on, and little details that are kind of easy to miss even though they're right in the face. Like, it took me about 2 or 3 times of looking at this page until I noticed, like, wait a minute, there's a big rat.
There is?
Yeah! It's like...
Oh, wow! There is!
Right? And there's so much color and so much detail. It's so easy to miss. And, like, oh, it's kind of a little thing of, like, you know, this place, not exactly the cleanest in the world.
Yeah.
There's some darkness here, too. Let's not forget.
And I realize the rat appears in 2 different panels. Good job, Brent Sensei.
Hey, no, like I said, I missed it many times.
I also just realized there's a guy on stilts. Oh, okay.
Selling Hamburg. Wait, what?
Who's that? Right, but the next page is quite the contrast from this double page spread.
Yeah,
there is still color, but we suddenly dive into, like, Jack's, what do you call it?
Like his, we get that shot of his memory.
Yeah.
This
sepia tone thing where we see Dave and Ted as well. They were young. It was a long time ago since he stepped inside a circus. Yeah. That's what triggered the memory. Yeah.
And just, Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yes.
Well, I was thinking, is this the first time we get the idea of how, of when the mother died?
Huh.
Because we knew she's been dead, but with, and we've seen them kind of like as teenagers and stuff like that, and even younger before, but there's no mention of the mom. But here we have it set out that he was six or seven, Davey was older and dad took us, mom was dead by then.
Mm.
So his mom died before he was even six.
Mm.
And I don't know if an age had been determined in earlier issues.
Mm. Yeah, I don't remember that as well. So I think this is the first time you actually get a handle on anything about when mom died.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have both my parents are still living.
Mm.
But and that probably, you know, colors my own thoughts on things, but I remember reading this and just being surprised because they kind of make a lot of connections that, you know, kind of Jack felt closer to his mom.
Right.
The impression I was getting of earlier issues. And then to hear that she died when he was so young.
Mm.
I was like, wow, you know, to have that much of a bond, I really thought she would have been around longer.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I guess, you know, if he was old enough to experience his mom's love, he would have latched onto that and, you know, always remembered it as that difference. That different kind of affection between him and his dad and him and his mom. So, yeah.
And I
Adele, that's her name.
And I suppose you could even say that, I mean, maybe that's one of the reasons he had a hard time connecting with his dad. Mm-hmm. As opposed to his mom, is because the memory of his mother might have always lived on. You know, I mean, it's preserved in amber. It can't be tarnished by knowing, you know, a family member as an adult.
Right. Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm just reading too much in that one sentence, but it really made me think.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And We get into the freak show. I wanted to ask, did you get the one of us reference?
No.
Because that is, and this is, you know how there's some references that you get firsthand, and there's some references that you get only because you've heard references to those references and the explanation of those references?
Yep.
That is how I know One of Us. Like, I know it's from an old kind of cult movie called Freaks, and they have the One of Us, One of Us. But I've never actually seen that movie and only heard references to the reference.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that's all I got.
So this is his way of, you know, they're referencing pop culture.
Yeah.
Right here. I see. Oh, there were a lot of name drops in this issue that I should have Googled, but I didn't.
No worries. I think that's one of the fun things about reading through this with you, is it kind of, you know, helps me from taking things for granted, because we come from the different backgrounds, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did recognize Tim Burton, though. I know who Tim Burton is, which really helped, because it you know, Jack saying that he is a fan of Todd Browning. I don't know who he is, and Tim Burton. Oh, really? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what Fantasy Island is, but having known Tim Burton and really liking what he's done so far, I kind of get what. You know, Jack is trying to say that kind of like creepy, I don't even know how to put a name to it. It's it's like dark and
even if it's colorful, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, but it's also very fantastical. It's very it's almost as if it is made unrealistic on purpose. Yeah, that kind of thing. So,
and that's, I mean, that's kind of one of the things that was kind of interesting about having the freak show here to me is this is the world of DC Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the separation between someone like, you know, on the next page we have a Finnegan, the fish boy.
Mm.
What's the separation between someone like him and... Geez, now I can't remember. I can't remember this B or C character from a few comics. Was it Lagoon Boy? which is also a character who looks more fish-like, but is kind of in the Aquaman family of comics.
Mm-mm-mm.
Like, what's the separation between someone here who is labeled a freak and is kind of a victim, and someone who might look the same but be considered a hero?
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, things like that do make you think, you know, if you compare them to real life.
I knew every time I see Octavia now, I'm reminded of one of my jobs I used to do here in Japan was travel to different special needs schools. And some of the schools were, you know, I mean, they're all of different qualities and different calibers and things like that. And some of the students there obviously had needs. Like, part of the reason they were in the school is because, you know, of mental challenges. Some of them, they needed to be a school that was actually connected to a hospital because they just needed that type of care because of body issues. But then sometimes I'd meet kids who seemed to be completely normal, you know, mentally and capable-wise. But, for example, one of the students I taught, really funny, really clever guy, but one arm, basically his hand was just two fingers, that almost like a crab pincher would be how to explain it. And the other arm basically ended in a single finger. So it just kind of came to that point. And I just kind of wondered, like, is the only reason he's in these schools because of how he looks? Sorry for that really random tangent, but I just, you know, seeing Octavia, who has kind of, in a way, four limbs that end in a single point, and of course, you know, this, you know, she's more of an octopus-inspired creation, whereas the real-life student I had, I mean, it was obviously not an octopus.
Right.
But, yeah, it just makes me think of
how
we do kind of look at others.
Yeah, definitely. It's very important. Young people need to think about these things, I feel. So if you're young, you know, out there, let's
say, like, in your 20s.
Yeah.
Lydia.
I'm almost out of my 20s, so...
Trust me, as someone who just turned 35, almost, is still a long ways.
Okay, that's a good thing to know. Yeah. When we are introduced... So, back to the circus. When we are introduced to the cosmic geek...
Yeah.
One of the first things I thought was like, oh, he's Kree. And then, oh, wait a minute, wrong universe. Yeah. So, he's not Kree.
That, I feel, without any spoilers, I can confirm.
Yeah.
The Cosmic Geek is not Kree.
Yeah. Sorry, DC. Yeah. Okay, so what do we have to say about this guy?
I would like, because I've read this before, I would like to hear your thoughts.
My thoughts?
Yeah.
Oh, he reminded me of The Mist.
Like, really?
His features.
Mm-hmm.
shirts and everything. Maybe it's the way his hair falls. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know. It just felt like he was very Cree-like. He was,
The light blue skin, I think, really light adds. Blue skin.
Yeah. Maybe he's a descendant of the Smurfs. Okay, well, anyway, I thought that he was speaking an alien language. I don't know, it was just very confusing. It's like even Jack's narration.
Yeah.
It's not Jack's narration because it's like done in third person.
Exactly.
But.
Like I love that change of once we get to the pain, the change it and we get the white boxes, mm-hmm. text boxes.
Mm-mm.
It's a different narrator.
Yeah. So it was just really strange. I wasn't prepared for any of this. Like he touched Jack. And suddenly Jack had all these hallucinations and I think it was real. Like it wasn't in his head, it was real because you can see the scene with the people and the other people in the circus. They were reacting to how Jack was reacting and they were like, "Hey, what's wrong with him?" Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then after that you're being brought into a mindscape where he is experiencing things in his head, obviously, with you know, like the Saturday Night Fever kind of stuff. Yeah. So I don't know, just felt that he was the Mist level creepy, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's what I have to say. Oh, but I, that was like, there's an eye on his chest. It was kind of creepy as well.
Kind of embedded in there.
Yeah.
I don't know how to talk about this character because, you know, over the next few issues we learn a lot more about him.
Okay.
So I think I may kind of save more thoughts kind of to later. But I just kind of talk about, I love how we go in there and we get that page of the light and the colors and the bright lights and how everything does kind of, because of the top-down lighting, the Cosmic Geek looks very washed out. And then the whole next page in the six-panel grid, it's just the black backgrounds. But we've got the light still in there, so it somehow feels like both very dark and that things are just kind of blinding and washed out at the same time.
Yeah.
And then after he gets touched on the next page, there's like the kind of the sense of falling that just goes from the whole panel layout of the close up on his face to the hand to the chest emblem to the face and the language. But it does have this sense of just descent. And that it's actually a descent into madness.
Right. Quite literally, yeah.
Yeah, and I just really love the how everything of the whole team the combine to make these pages effective and affecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like in that flashback kind of thing, all the guys were wearing the same necklace.
Yeah. Now, are those all the same guy?
Oh! Never thought of that. Huh. What do you think? I don't know. But we'll find out.
We'll find out.
Someday. Okay. And he meets Mr. Bliss. This was kind of weird. I mean, Mr. Bliss is the one on the cover, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What is his motive? You know, who is he? Why is this man who is seemingly in the position of power suddenly out to sabotage Jack Knight? That's what I'm... Like, why does Jack have... Okay, but then again, the weird would find him. So, I don't know. Anyways, yes. Jack wants to buy stuff, basically. Mm. He wants to collect stuff and buy them, stock up his shop. So here he sees a business opportunity. He jumps at it, but unfortunately, he pretty much gets attacked. The thing is, I don't know. I think there's this like small part deep inside Jack. He probably knows that he can get out of a lot, like any kind of shitty situation. So I think he's prepared somewhere, somehow, and inside of him. I feel like I was taking one of those quizzes on the Harry Potter site, Pottermore. And one of the questions were, can a curse, true or false, does a curse affect someone, something like, unless they give their secret consent. So basically, every curse needs to have the person's secret consent for it to work. So consent is just one of those like maybe weakness in your heart, I don't know, but that made me think like that in your heart there's always, if for a character like Jack, there's always someone coming to defeat me or to come attack me. And
wait, so was the answer true?
I think that's one of those personality things.
Oh, okay, so there's not really a true answer.
Yeah, which one do you think? Do you think that secret consent is necessary for a spell to work or a curse to work? So
I would have to say no.
I said no.
We agree. Yay!
Yay! Yeah, but I don't know. That's what I don't know if you. I've made the link clear, but that's what I think about Jack. Why trouble seeks him?
Well, in a way, like I think, I don't know if I could say I agree or disagree, because I think we're thinking along the same lines. But like, because I read the scene, and I've been rewatching House, the TV show, and one of the things they mentioned on a recent episode, and so this was fresh in my mind, is how patients come in, they talk to the doctor, and then as the doctor's leaving, or as the patient's about to leave, it's like, oh, and by the way, and then out comes the real reason they showed up. And I was wondering about this scene of, is Jack really looking... Like, he comes here, and, it opens like, okay, so I'm a dealer, and I do this stuff, and blah, 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 which is all true, is that why he's there? Is that really any reason why he's there? Is this just like a, let me get my foot in the door, and so I don't come in just being like, by the way, here's something that might feel like an accusation. Instead, he comes in there... Like, by the way, I'm a dealer, I do this, hey, maybe we can get in here, see, I'm kind of a, I play the game. Oh, by the way, was it all an act? Like, he's not really a prisoner, right? And kind of the way he goes about asking it, and the way, like, you kind of mentioned how he feels he can get himself out of trouble, and I was wondering, is he doing this because he's not really expecting trouble? Like, he kind of feels, like, does he feel he has a responsibility to look into it? Like, well, I kind of play a hero, and this, something about this, set off my spider signal. So I feel like I have to check, but... I mean, this is just a thing, so obviously it's not really going to be a problem. I just need to get the say-so that it is an act.
Right. I see where you're coming from.
It's just an idea.
Definitely.
Huh. But I mean, and then he leaves, bumps into someone who says he should watch it next time. And then the freaks attack.
Yeah. It caught me by surprise, honestly, because I really thought that Crusher was going to show him where the goods were.
Mm.
And then suddenly, like, oh!
Yeah.
But I really like the page where all the freaks were, you know, clawing at Jack, because I thought they were really interesting. In the way that they were drawn, and I particularly liked the fish guy. And the jester? The jester guy?
Yeah, the clown looking guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. With the vampire teeth?
Right. But this reminded me of that scene in the, like, it's like this, where was that? The previous issue with the shade. Mm-hmm. You know, like hell and...
Yeah, and also stuff. Circus folk.
Yeah, yeah. What's the circus thing?
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to find out. Mm-hmm. Anyway, these creatures say that Jack Knight, we can't help.
Mm.
We can't help but hurt him?
Mm-hmm. So what did you make of that?
I thought that they were controlled by something. Maybe, like, you know how Crusher puts his hand on top of them. Maybe they're controlled by Crusher, and they didn't finish their sentences, but, you know, at the end, they kept saying, Jack, no, it'd be... And then Jack, he said, I don't want to hurt you, so, you know... I guess he interprets it as they don't want to hurt him as well.
Yeah, I think so too. And I was wondering if here, since they keep calling him Jack Knight, do they know that he's Starman?
Oh.
I mean, he is kind of a public figure.
Mm-hmm. Either that or... I don't know. What if behind the scenes, you know, they were like, okay, team, Jack Knight's coming tonight, and we are going to control you. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Ready, get Jack Knight on three. One, two, three, Jack Knight!
Yeah! So, I don't know. I mean, but he didn't announce that he was going to come pick up some stuff. He just, like, appeared at the circus, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And
how do they know him?
So one of the things that gets me over the next few pages is we've got kind of once Jack breaks out of the tent, we've got three or four pages of action, and in those pages, the violence in it feels a bit more like comic violence.
Ah, yes. Like the way Crusher lands and his face kind of looks
silly. Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, I get him and then crush. You know, rip. I don't know. It's like the ones when he was in the tent, they did have these sound effects, but it wasn't as...
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it's the coloring. It just didn't feel as silly. I wouldn't say silly.
Yeah.
Comical. Well,
there's a design to it, like the way it's like Jack lands completely on his head, and like the one eye closed and one eye open when Crusher hits, and like the way like Jack and the monkey bonk their heads on the wall.
Yeah,
there's just
something
about it that... It feels like a different tone from the violence we've seen until now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this feels more like Tom and Jerry.
Right. Yeah. I see where you're. Yes. Good analogy. Nice. I was really interested as to how Jack made it back. He's like lying in the fields and like, oh, I'm so dying. And then, but he gets back to his van. He gets back to Opal. And he has this flashback.
Yeah.
With this guy who's not from this era, definitely. Looks like a pirate.
Does look like a pirate. And Tony Harris likes pirates.
Ooh. Okay.
Yep.
Right.
And then he gets geared up. So, yeah, like, I don't know. I feel in a way, because we've talked so much about it in the past, I almost feel like we don't really need to dwell on how good James Robinson is at the narration. Like, I kind of feel like especially since we just hit the hour point of the show, but all throughout this book, when it's Jack's narration, when it's like the third person narrator, Robinson just does a great job.
Yeah. A lot of imagery and really interesting, what do you call these analogies? Like, combine folding in the egg whites carefully in tarragon and garlic, season to taste and bake for 30 minutes. Got circus yourself a circus to play.
Yeah, it's yum. Really clever. It's fun reading. So just take this as a general, good job, James Robinson.
Yeah, we didn't gloss over it because we, you know, thought it was bad. It was just too good. And the thing is, it's one of those things that if you don't read it, the effect would be different, I feel. You need to look at the text within the pictures themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just such a good job of getting inside the character's head without any and Robinson, I feel like he stands right at that fine line of not being too much.
Right. Yes.
It feels like I'm reading something substantial without being overly wordy.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
And then we get on the last page, we get Jack, and he's got his staff and he's got his glasses and he's like, yeah, I'm doing the hero stance, I'm going back into the fight.
Yes. I really like how he says, Dad, you were right when you said the Vietnam flags. You're like, he's thinking of Dad. So he's going back to be continued. It's written right there, to be continued. So
dun dun dun.
Yeah. Until next time, you guys.
So one thing I was thinking about this final page, and this might be something that, like, say, separates Jack Knight from say Spider-Man, or to keep it in DC, someone like, you know, Batman, is that because Jack Knight, he's Starman, but he's still Jack Knight. He's still Jack.
Okay.
And he doesn't really, he wears the goggles and he has the staff, but he doesn't really have a Starman costume.
Right.
Even the elements of it that are costume-esque, when he puts them on, like when he chooses them, he tells us, like, this is great. Right. The goggles help. I get cold. Yeah. I need a jacket. Well, here's a little bit of decoration, but it's aesthetics and it's Jack. And I was thinking at the end of this issue that until this page, we don't actually get Starman in the Starman comic, but it doesn't feel like we're not getting any Starman.
Right. It is still like suiting up, but
yeah,
it's not a conventional suit.
Yeah, or even just, like, for example, like, to go back to I don't know why I keep thinking Spider-Man rather than Batman, but it just feels more appropriate somehow, of, like, if if I were to read a Spider-Man comic, or if you were to read a Spider-Man comic, and throughout it, all you're getting is Peter Parker, like, I'm doing science, I'm helping kids, I'm taking, you know, photographs for the Daily Bugle. Like, and if only at the very last page of Spider-Man, he's like, and now I'm going to put on my spider outfit and go punch people in the face. Like, right. There might be a kind of sense of like, well, it was a good issue, but the title character, Spider-Man, was not really in it. We just spent time with Peter Parker. But I don't, like, even though the same exact thing is going here, I don't feel like anything was missing.
I know what you mean. I think one of the things is because Jack, he does not try to hide who he is. He denies it, but he doesn't try to bury it.
Yeah.
So it's always right there, you know. I guess if anyone just goes, hey, Jack, are you Starman? He would be like, oh, yeah, kind of.
it's not a secret.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's why we kind of always get Starman. We always get this guy who's ready to spring into Starman mode without having to run off to change into a suit. I don't know. He does change into a suit eventually, but it's more of like a, okay, I have to go back. Yeah. I need my suit. It's out of necessity.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the suit in the way that, you know, if you're going outside and you know there's going to be weather, you're going to take an umbrella and you're going to take a jacket.
That's right, that's right.
So overall, what did you think of this issue of A Night at the Circus?
You know what? I thought it was really confusing. Like, I still think it was really confusing because, you see, I'm expecting for the story to move forward. And I know it's moving forward, but I don't know how. I don't know where it's taking me. That's why I felt that it was, yeah, and, I don't know. I mean, I really appreciate the narration and Jack's thoughts, but what are they about? You see, that's the thing. That's I hear him. I see what he's saying. I see the connection with the story. But how is the story connecting to the bigger story? You know, his what's going to happen next to Jack as Starman? Is this the new villain? Is it? What is this? Yeah. So why did they attack him? What is Turk County? You know, why are the people also weird in Turk County? Things like that.
I don't want to give anything away.
Okay.
But I can say, as someone who's read this several times, this is definitely a comic that the more you read it, the more entertaining. Like, it keeps giving me entertainment.
Okay.
Because you're asking those questions, which are, you know, completely normal, understandable questions. Where is this story going? It feels like a side quest. What's happening? And with the knowledge of what happens over the next, you know, 80 issues or I guess 70 issues just in this series alone, not to mention all the tie-ins, then I can kind of see, like, okay, this is the thing. Here's parts of, like, the ripple effect of how this is going to expand, and here's one of those little ripples that's just going to keep on growing and really help shape Opal City and the story of Jack Knight. Okay. So it's really rewarding to kind of reread this.
Right. Okay. I'll take your word for it.
I think you will be pleased of where this heads.
Okay.
Also, just to kind of add, so we just finished issue 7, but if you flip back of readers at home, if you flip back to issue 2, I think this marks in issue 2 was where we had Jack's first dealing with Charity.
Yes,
and this is our first little time of one of her predictions comes true. Because she has the thing of, oh, and you'll have a night at the circus like none other. And we've on that page, we've got Circus, and then we've got Freaks, 25 cents.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Huh.
And not to mention that just how far... I don't know if it would be just Tony Harris or just the team as a whole, but just how much better the art has gotten in this comic.
Mm.
I mean, nothing was wrong with the art in issue 2, but to compare it to how much more detailed the issue is in 7, it really is, you know, just that much progression in basically 5 issues is really astounding.
Yeah, yeah.
Go, yeah, art yeah. team, go.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, I totally get what you mean.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got for issue 7.
Okay.
Okay.
I have nothing else to add as well, except to be continued.
Da 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 da.
Yeah. I've already downloaded the next issue to read, so
excellent. I think one thing we're gonna have to get you your own copy of is if we can find them. I hear they might be out of print, but we gotta get you your own copy of the Omnibuy of the omnibuses, because I think reading it digital is nice, but there's something about having the actual collection, especially because
I get what you mean. Yeah,
yeah. Totally. In the later ones, some of the comics are a little, a little harder to come by, I think. So we'll see what we can do off air. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. Where can you find Brent?
Well, I kind of mentioned the Facebook pages for Comics League International and for me, my author page, just Brent Thomas. And then there's the website, deadlytroubadour.com. And then there's my Twitter at Dead Troubadour, because deadly is too many letters. And that's, I think, yeah. Oh, also, if you're enjoying the show, why don't you stop by iTunes, which is probably where you're subscribing from, and leave a review and a rating. So far, Comics League International only has 2, and they're from me and one of my friends and common guest Derek, so we could use a bit more from maybe less biased folk.
Yeah.
Also, if you're enjoying the show and want to show some appreciation, you can go to the Patreon site for Brent Thomas, and that's what, you know, kind of helps fund the storage space and the website hosting and all that for deadlytroubadour.com. So just go to Patreon and look for Brent Thomas, and I'd appreciate it.
Yep. Fund us.
How about you, Lydia?
Yes, funding. I actually don't have fund me, fund Brent. you can find me on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Ooh. Yes, I do all these things. And my username is Quek Channel on all of them, Quek Channel. And yeah, I tweet and I blog with photos about my life, not a lot about comic books, so life access like with discretion. Yes, life is like a comic. Yes. Yes, so that's where you can find me. Okay.
Yay. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the show.
Yes, issue 7. So next up we have issue 8. I don't know what the title is, but it's going to be about Jack going back to the circus.
I can't think of something clever, but I just, I kind of wish it would be Jack Goes Back to the Circus. Like, that'd be a great name. I thought you were going to jump in with me, sorry.
No, it's okay. I was going to let you have that solo.
But we're a team.
I'm more of a team sometimes. Okay, guys!
Bye!
Bye!
There's a star man waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a star man waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow. said that all the children boogie.